Devoured Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to episode 3 of Devour the Podcast. I'm your host, David, and as you've already noticed, the sound quality of this episode is leaps and bounds better than what it was in episode 1 and 2. That's because I went out and picked up a microphone today, and it's pretty awesome. Before I get into the main segments of the show, I want to shout out a couple podcasts that I listen to that I really enjoy. The first is a horror podcast called Night of the Living Podcast. It's a great show, and they release their episodes every Sunday. And at the moment, they're doing what they're calling Podcaster's Choice Month. And for the past month or so, every member of the show has chosen a film that is not horror related to review for the show. And one of the films that they reviewed recently that I actually checked out that I really enjoyed was called Cocaine Cowboys. Not horror, obviously. It's a documentary. Very, very good documentary. If you haven't seen it, I highly suggest it. It's on a Netflix instant watch if you want to check it out. But yeah, check out Night of Living Podcast. I really enjoy the show. It is the only horror podcast I currently listen to. And you can check them out over at nightoftheliveringpodcast.com or on iTunes by searching Night of the Living Podcast. The other show I wanted to shout out is a show that's a little bit different, it's not a horror podcast, it's more of a just general discussion show called Naturally Dead Wrong Podcast. It's hosted by a friend of mine, or a podcasting friend of mine, rather, Lucas, a.k.a. Wolfman Lucas, formerly of the Midnight Horror Show, and his girlfriend Chanel, and they've released 4 episodes, well, technically 5, because they did a 0 episode, but 4 episodes proper. And it's a bit of a grab bag show. They do the news, or interesting news, and other bits and things. The last episode they did, they chose a film for each other to review. Lucas reviewed Year of the Dog, and Chanel did Pulp Fiction, and it was an enjoyable episode. So go ahead and check them out. You can find them on Podomatic at naturallydeadwrongpodcast.podomatic.com or on iTunes. So, without any further ado, let's go ahead and jump right into our It Came From the Instant Queue segment.
It Came From the Instant Queue.
For this week's It Came From the Instant Queue, I'll be reviewing the film Sandman.
And we just want to spread our sickness to the world. If you're done watching this movie, you just want to get back.
I don't shoot these movies to be a piece of cinema. I shoot it so perverts give me money.
I'm a writer, director, sometimes I'm in it. You know, it's not snuff, but, you know, it looks close to it.
I had my grandmother, who is, you know, 81 at the time in the film. I stab her with an apple peeler and take out her dentures. If I needed her to take off her top, she'd do it.
It's like you're almost being kidnapped and tortured doing the movies.
Everything can be seen now. There's no escape from the camera.
My name is Eric. I'm the maker of the Sandman series. I sort of follow them for a little while and see how they look on camera, you know, to give them like a screen test kind of thing. Without telling them.
There are crazy people out there, and they don't look crazy.
I think my story of doing these murders and, you know, filming them would be an interesting story for anybody to watch.
I'm going to take your camera, and I'm going to film you while I'm killing you.
I have seen a real snuff film.
You said you wanted to see what it looked like.
Well, you just didn't give me a warning.
Oh, well, just... I don't give my actresses a warning, you know, sometimes.
It doesn't look that real.
You'd be surprised, like, how much the body is not like the movies.
All right, so Sandman. The synopsis from IMDb, or it's actually more of a plot summary than it is really a synopsis. But Sandman begins with footage from Michael Powell's exploration of voyeurism, Peeping Tom. Director J.T. Petty uses this footage as a starting point to examine the classic comparison between filmmaking and voyeurism, particularly within the horror genre. He goes on to investigate this connection further, but rather than looking to classic horror films, Petty explores the seedy underground genre fetish films. These movies are basically simulated snuff films where victims are raped and murdered in a variety of fantasy scenarios. The most notorious of this series is called Sandman, where voyeurism takes center stage as Petty plunges headfirst in this world of bizarre fetish films and comes up with mesmerizing interviews with the producers and actors of these movies. Much of the footage from these videos will shock and disturb even though a seasoned horror veteran. Anyway. The rest of the synopsis is really just the author's own point of view on it. This movie features Fred Vogel from Toe Tag Pictures, Bill Zebub, who I guess you could call a filmmaker. J.T. Petty, the director, is in this film as well. And Eric Markisak, I guess is his name, plays the character of Eric Rost. Now, this is one of those movies that I think I honestly wasn't sure if I was going to like it when I initially sat down to watch it. It's presented as a documentary, but it's a hard one to kind of describe as anything other than it's wrong to call it a mockumentary, although it has that element to it. It's part documentary, because I would say the interviews with the directors like Fred Vogel and Bill Zebub, and with the various other people he speaks to, the psychologists he talks to, the author of Men, Women, and Chainsaws who he talks to, those are all very real. And the discussions they have are very interesting, but there's also the whole side plot. Not really a side plot. I mean, it's throughout the whole story of its own thing, really, dealing with Eric and the Sandman series. And really, it's like I say, it's a quasi documentary in a sense. I mean, there is that element of the documentary to it, but there's also that the fictionalized part with Eric and his Sandman series. And this is, as a documentary, this is a fantastic movie. It's great to see. It's great to kind of have somebody talking. It's interesting to see what these various people think about what they're doing as directors and such, and to kind of take a look at the quote unquote underground of the horror scene. And the storyline itself with Eric is really kind of an interesting little distraction, wouldn't call it a distraction, but it's an interesting storyline, because you're taking a character who is seemingly like all these other directors, like Fred Vogel, who is part of Toe Tag Pictures. They created the August Underground series, which, if you've never seen those, be glad. I sat through about 10 minutes of, I believe, Mortem, and I couldn't do it. It was too realistic and too fucked up for me. Bill Zebub is a really super low budget director. I've seen the clips of his movies they show in this movie. Pretty much give me no inclination to want to check out his stuff. Although I am willing to give Toe Tag a second chance and try and watch the August Underground films. Although they are very difficult to get through, just the last time I tried to watch them. But taking those two directors who do make these very, you know, in Zebub's case, very low budget, basically shit movies, and Toe Tag, who makes these very extreme, ultra snuff films that are very known for being very realistic, although not. They are fiction. They look very realistic. Toe Tag really is on the map for being known for their special effects. And then interjecting this character of Eric, who claims that his series Sandman is just, you know, it's like these others, but then it starts to become the line between whether or not he's actually killing these girls. It very quickly becomes apparent that you're starting to think that no, maybe he really is killing these people. I'm not going to give away the ending of this one, but it is it's a very interesting movie. It's a, like I said, it's a part documentary, part narrative. And it's nice to see that. It's a nice way of changing things up, I think, because typically, I don't think most horror movies don't have, or it's very rare that we see a really genuinely interesting new twist on the horror genre, especially in lower budget films. And in this one, I think that Petty has a very good idea of what he wants to do with this movie, and he takes the documentary style and really creates a documentary with a fictional element to it that's built into the whole story, or built into the documentary itself. So it's kind of hard to call it a documentary, but at the same time there are documentary elements within the movie. So if you have Netflix or the Instant Watch, you'll probably have seen this on the listings at some point. The spelling of the title is S&M, and then man, and then as Eric says in the film, it's Sandman. He says people say it's S&M man, but it's not how he spells it strangely, which is kind of interesting. But I would say this is probably one of my favorite movies that I've seen recently through Netflix that I just thought was something that was really caught my eye. I've always had a fascination with the idea of extreme horror and the snuff films especially. I think it's an interesting sort of legend or urban myth, if they are an urban myth or not. And there was a very good documentary on Netflix at one point called Snuff, The History of Killing on Film, which I will probably do for, it came from the Instant Queue, or maybe our feature presentation at some point. But Sandman, I highly recommend it. I would give this movie, this is definitely a 4 out of 5, or a 9 out of 10. This is a great, great movie. Bill Zebub comes across as being very much a creep. And I think that's just kind of who he is. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like as you watch this, the people he talks to, he doesn't present them in any way that makes them come across as any other way than who they are, except for the Eric character, who obviously is portraying a character. Whereas the rest of the people who are interviewed are just real people. And I think that's really kind of what makes this movie work so well, is that there's that element of realism that kind of blurs the line of whether this Eric character is a real person, or if it's, you know, if this Sandman movies he's making are you know, real or not. And I think it's kind of a nice little way of doing things. Unfortunately, it doesn't quite hit the mark as being as realistic as I think Petty was trying to go for, but it does work as a documentary with a fictional narrative wrapped inside of it. So I highly recommend this film. If you have not seen it, check it out. And that's about it for this. It came from the Instant Queue. So let's go ahead and get into our feature presentation of Hostel Part 3.
And now our feature presentation.
All right, for our feature presentation this week, I am reviewing Hostel Part 3.
Thanks for coming. We're not here for you, bitch. We're here for this.
My friends have money we can pay you.
You aren't even paid for.
Place your bets. Enjoy the show. Now, who wants to bid on killing the group?
Please don't. Please.
Ah!
While attending a bachelor party in Las Vegas, four friends are enticed by two sexy escorts to join them at a private party way off the strip. Once there, they are horrified to find themselves the subjects of a perverse game of torture, where members of the elite hunting club are hosting the most sadistic show in town. This film stars Kit Pardue as Carter McCullen, Brian Hallisey as Scott, John Hensley as Justin, Sarah Habel as Kendra, Chris Coy as Travis, the creepy white kid, as who I will be referring to him as throughout this review, Skylar Stone as Mike Malloy, Zule Hanoi, I am not sure, as Nikki, and Nikolai Shrelly as Victor, a.k.a. the Ukrainian guy. So, first off, I'm not a huge fan of Eli Roth as a director. In fact, I really wasn't that impressed with Hostel Part 1, to be quite honest. I own it, and I actually went and saw the second one in the theater, because I actually like that one better. But Hostel was an interesting idea that I felt was actually improved upon in the sequel, where Roth actually gave us characters he actually gave a shit about. Unfortunately, this one is kind of what you would expect for a direct-to-DVD sequel to a franchise that's not being directed by the original director. Although, that's not always necessarily a bad thing, and I will bring up why that is when I review Cabin Fever 2. But Hostel Part 3 starts out with what seems to be a very cliche, your typical kind of hostel opening of a gentleman, sort of a the creepy white kid, Travis, arriving at a hostel, and he enters the room, and there's the a Ukrainian girl in her underwear, and Victor, and they have a sort of a tense moment where you think, oh, he's obviously, the Ukrainian couple is here, and, something bad's going to happen. And then it spins everything and flips it on its head, and it turns out that they're in Vegas, and that Travis is actually drugged Victor and his girlfriend to be captured by the to be captured as victims for the elite hunting club. And I thought that was actually kind of an interesting little twist, and I actually thought that was something that was actually one of the few things that I liked in this movie when I was watching it. I thought, oh, hey, that's a cool intro to this film, and not what I was expecting at all. So, as I said in the synopsis, this is about a group of friends who go to Vegas for a bachelor party, and I will say that setting a hostel movie in Vegas was a good idea. They actually do make the joke about, what stays in or what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, and taking that too far later in the film. But the movie starts out on that strong note, and then introduces Carter and Scott, his friend, or was it Justin? I don't remember. It doesn't matter, really. They all end up getting murdered anyway. Spoiler alert, a whole lot of people die. But really, this wasn't a very good movie. I mean, honestly, for a hostel movie, this was probably one of the worst. I wouldn't say it's necessarily the worst of the series. It is the worst of the series. I would say number two is the best. Number one is probably a little bit better than this one, just because the quality and the production values are much higher in the first one than in this one. But this one, they had a pretty good story. They changed things up, and they brought the elite hunting club to Vegas, and instead of the usual just people paying to kill someone, they added this element of there being a group of the elite hunting club members sitting in a sort of a theater setting watching someone else kill one of the victims while placing bets on, what are they going to say to the hunter who's about to kill them, how are they going to be killed, etc., etc. And I thought that was actually kind of a nifty little twist on the story, and really something interesting. Unfortunately, this is a really, really by-the-numbers movie. There's not a whole lot going on, particularly. Their friend, what is his name? Mike goes missing after their night with the escorts, and sure enough, he's been captured and he gets killed, and they're trying to find Mike, and they're trying to find the girl he was with, and et cetera, et cetera. Basically, the typical hostel setup of trying to figure out what happened to our friend, what's going on, blah, 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 blah. Really, there's a twist about a half an hour from the ending, the last half hour of this movie. There's a twist that I thought was kind of interesting. I thought, oh, well, I didn't see that coming. And then they proceeded to completely just ruin that twist with the justification. It was absolutely ridiculous. I mean, it was just so dumb. And then, what's even worse is the ending of this fucking movie. That after all hell breaks loose in the compound where this the elite hunting show is happening, and really, I have no idea where they found this building out in the middle of the desert, or how nobody noticed this giant goddamn building out in the middle of the desert, because it's a pretty big, factory-looking building or some type place. So, after all hell breaks loose and our hero is trying to escape, there's a large explosion that blows up the whole place, and our villain has escaped, and it seemed to be going in a rather downer direction, and then the ending happens, and it's completely ridiculous, and completely took me out of the movie. I was just so just disgusted with the ending. It was just so bad and completely unbelievable. So this was just the acting wasn't bad. I will give it that. The acting was pretty good. Production-wise, it didn't look terrible, although you could tell that most of what was happening, they probably only shot in Vegas for a couple of days, and then shot everything else out in Los Angeles or in the California desert to get the same effect. Because you get a lot of wide shots of Vegas in this trip and things like that, so. But really, it was just a bad movie. After the opening with the twist, I thought, oh, this might be kind of good. And then we go on to a by-the-numbers, pretty much typical, just bad horror movie. And what was really most disappointing, and I can forgive bad writing sometimes, but this was a hostile movie, and it really failed as a hostile movie because none of the deaths were particularly interesting. I mean, there was one kind of interesting death that was, from a special effects standpoint, looked really cool. But other than that, most of the deaths were really dull and not that inventive at all. And I was really, really let down by that. I mean, I know that sounds kind of odd, but considering that Hostel was really, as much as I hate to admit it, that those two films were really hinged on the fact that they were violent, gory, just insanely, the entire Hostel franchise has been hinged on the fact that people are going to die in very horrible ways. It's kind of like watching the Saw series. After a while, it becomes, all right, how are they going to die? And with a movie like Hostel 3, especially if it's a direct-to-video sequel and not a theatrical sequel, that's exactly what I think most people who would rent this would go into it expecting is, okay, this is a Hostel movie, there's going to be a lot of really cool death scenes. And there's really not. Other than the first death scene we see, which, like I said, was pretty cool, the rest of them are really terrible. And it was just, it was a mess. This movie was fucking terrible. Not nearly as bad as Yellow Brick Road, I will say that. I didn't feel like I'd wasted my time watching this. I just felt disappointed. Like, there was potential, but it was just wasted on, a badly written, not necessarily poorly directed, but a badly written script. Maybe it was suffering from budget because they weren't able to do, maybe that's why they weren't able to do any elaborate deaths, but it wasn't very good. So if you've seen this at your local Blockbuster or at Walmart, Best Buy, Target, wherever you usually see movies for sale, or at Redbox or Blockbuster, like I said, for rental, skip it. It's really not worth it. If it pops up on Netflix Instant Watch within the next few months, and you decide to waste an hour of your time to watch it, you won't regret it. I wouldn't say, but it's not really that good. If you like the Hostel movies, just don't bother. It's really nothing in this movie really enhances the Hostel franchise. The only thing I would say that really adds to the franchise is that they changed up how the victims are, how the whole the setup of the Hunters Club, which I thought was nice. That was really the only thing that really was expanded upon. Like in the first or in the second film, we got to see more of how the the Hunters operate, and in this one they took that a little bit farther. But really, it's not worth your time. So this is definitely not a recommend. I would give this I don't know if I'm doing a 5 scale or a 10 scale, but if this is a 10 scale, this movie's a 5. Not a bad movie. If I'm doing this on a 5 scale, I'd give this movie a 2. It's not very good. Not terrible, but the ending really, really sucked, and the death scenes were completely uneventful, and nothing particularly stood out to me about them. Like I said, the acting was fine, but other than that, it was really just sort of a waste of time. So don't bother. If you can get it for cheap, or you're bored and you want to watch it, knock yourself out. But otherwise, I wouldn't rent it or watch it again. So Hostel 3, on a scale of 1 to 5, give it a 2. On a scale of 1 to 10, I give it a 5. So that's it for this episode. Next week, I will start the Paranormal Activity series with Paranormal Activity 1 as our feature presentation, and I will find something interesting to watch for It Came From the InstaQue. So thank you so much for listening, and I hope you enjoyed the show. To contact Devour the Podcast, you can email us at cenobitedave@gmail.com. That's cenobitedave@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter at ddelamorte, that's capital D, DELLAMORTE. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/devourtheblog. You can subscribe on iTunes, search for Devour the Blog, or visit the website devourtheblog.wordpress.com. Our intro song is entitled Gloom Horizon by Kevin MacLeod and can be found at incompetech.com.